Resolution 11410, authorizing and directing the Corporation Counsel and outside counsel to provide the Director, Department of Audit, confidential and privileged access to the unreleased Behavioral Health Division Patient Security Report. This item was laid over from our last meeting.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Session, would you explain the alternate?
Well, just a little background first. In November, the Board adopted the resolution authorizing the auditor to have access to certain documentation related to the BHD issue. And asked for a report back on the process of that. Last month, last cycle, reported back with the report that is contained in your packet. The auditor provided an update in closed session. That's why none of this needs to be in closed session today. We're pretty much done with that issue. Now we're just resolving the business of making sure that the auditor and other interested parties have access to appropriate information, in particular this committee and the audit department. So we prepared last cycle an ordinance that essentially clarified the roles of the committee and the role of the audit department in having access to that information. Subsequently, the Judiciary Committee, you folks, laid it over with and asked for a report back addressing concerns relative to revisions to clearly define who the client is, as well as concerns about impending claims. We've worked with the Corporation Counsel's office and have an alternate ordinance for your consideration. And if you choose to act on this today, we would encourage you to move the adoption of the alternate ordinance that's presented before you. It's not a substitute because this matter hasn't been properly referred to the body, so it's an alternate ordinance for your consideration. And at that point, I'll turn it over to you. Corporation Counsel to discuss the issues. And
Mr. Chairman, as I understood from listening to the audio recording of the last committee meeting, I was not here in person, but I did listen to it.
Was it
an
clear?
Open session.
Was it pretty clear?
Yes, it was.
Most of it.
Good answer.
There were two concerns that were raised. One was that the proposed ordinance that was under consideration at the last meeting did not address pre-suit matters that were not yet in litigation. Mm-hmm. And the language that in the alternate, I think, was drafted to intend to cover that situation so that it now covers not just litigation, but matters that are likely to be in litigation, which follows the closed session motion. The other issue was a longer discussion about who the client is. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, neither Mr. Jorgensen, myself, or Mr. Shea, we thinks we can adequately define that in an ordinance. It is a subject of many law review articles, especially in the government lawyer context. I have with me, I didn't make copies of it, but it's just an example, an ethical opinion that was written in New York in 2004 that covers 14 pages on this issue in governmental lawyers and who do they work for. Mm-hmm. It's not a clear answer. It's a difficult answer, and it varies. Normally, it's simple. Normally, we are the county's lawyers, and all of the county, the agency's lawyers. but there are rare times where there are conflicts, and we may have, as in the recent past, a lawyer for the county executive, a lawyer for the county board, and another lawyer for the county as an institution as a whole. And in those situations, each lawyer's client is different. And so those situations are extremely rare. And I don't think it's easy to write an ordinance. I don't think it's possible to write an ordinance to cover all of those situations and say, in these situations, the Judiciary Committee shall get the report, the auditor shall get the report, and these ones they may not because of a conflict of interest. We have written the ordinance so that it says the Judiciary Committee will get access to attorney-client privileged information and attorney work product. And the way it's written in all situations. And likewise for the auditor, in all situations. If there's going to be a situation where you ask, or the auditor asks, an attorney for something, frankly, it's going to be that attorney's ethical obligation, if they think it's prohibited for them to give it to you, to say no. It's not likely to be Corporation Counsel. It's more likely to be somebody that has been hired by the county to represent a separate county officer or employee because of a conflict of interest. And so it's more likely to be an outside attorney who's going to come in here and say, my ethical obligation prevents me from doing giving you, the Judiciary Committee, anything about my communications with the sheriff or my communications with the county executive or whoever the other entity is. It's in a conflict with the Judiciary Committee or the county board. And so then it's frankly going to have to be resolved by a court on whether or not the auditor, the Judiciary Committee, the county board, or vice versa, whether the county exec can get information that the county board has retained from an attorney who is in a conflict with the county exec. My point is these situations are very rare and they can't be legislated. They're going to have to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. The ordinance is drafted to give complete absence. And if an exception comes up, it'll have to be dealt with at the time. I'm sorry that that's not what you're looking for, but I think it's the best we can do with this.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Supervisor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that explanation, and I can support the alternate. I just have a follow-up question. I think one of the more recent examples out at BHD might be then one where an attorney might say, I'm the exception. And I don't want to go back through that, but the irony is part of this ordinance change is the main part of it is really to grant, make sure the auditor has access. That was the first primary objective. But the objective of this piece was to try and get a little bit more at who's the client and making sure this committee has access. And so I guess in the other case where you're not recommending trying to prescribe that authority in absolute or making I follow your logic here. Is there another way to get at that type of situation? Could we not require that contracts with outside counsel have a stipulation in there saying that the attorney work product is also reportable to the Judiciary Committee or whatever and other entity of county government other than the department? I'm wondering if there's another way versus doing an ordinance to get to that piece of it so that an attorney would be even less likely to be able to say, well, I just represent the department.
Mr. Chairman, I think the direct answer to your question is no, but let me explain why I say that. There's a couple things. First of all, a large part of this is going to depend on your relationship with your corporation counsel, and I mean the corporation counsel. I mean, to the extent there's trust there, these situations will be most of the time, I think, probably always worked out. They have been for decades. And so that's an important piece. I mean, and to the extent you lose trust in your corporation counsel, that's a bigger issue, obviously. In terms of outside counsel, if and I go back to my example of the, I think it was a 35-hour work week case, where there were three different attorneys representing three different county entities. And if we, i.e. the county, are saying to Attorney Jim Smith that we're going to pay you to represent the county executive because he has a conflict of interest with us, the county board. And then you tell that attorney that as part of your representation of the county executive, you have to turn over to the county board all of your attorney-client privilege communications with the county exec. You make it impossible, I believe, for that attorney to do their job under their rules. They are required to maintain confidentiality by the Supreme Court rules with their client. And you are hiring them to work with their client, the county exec, just like you're hiring someone else to work with you in that case, and you're hiring a third lawyer to work to represent the public's interest or whatever the broader case. So could you put that in a contract? Yes. Would an attorney take a job under those circumstances? I wouldn't. I don't think they should, because they're asking them in the contract to breach their attorney's ethics, to maintain confidence of their communications with the client who told them they are being paid to represent. Again, I don't want to get, these are really highly unusual cases, and I don't think the fire situation actually falls into this. But I don't really want to rehash the fire situation because I wasn't personally involved. But I don't know what else I can say other than that. If I'm not answering your question, I'm happy to answer now.
Well, and I also don't want to like rehash the whole thing also, but on the other hand, part of my constituents, one of the questions they'll ask me is, well, have you fixed what happened before so it can't happen again? And I'm not sure I can say yes to that. And so, is the answer in that case to make all contracts with Milwaukee County, and they're dealing primarily with a department versus a contract with a particular department? Or, and I'm going to support this, don't get me wrong. I just don't want to go through all this and at the end not be able to prevent what happened this past summer? Because to me, that's probably the most, without going through all the details, it was probably one of the more egregious situations here. And it wasn't an instance, in my opinion, I heard what you said about trust in corp counsel. It wasn't that that the county board distrusted corp counsel. I think they disagreed with the position corp counsel took, which is different. That's not distrusting them or whatever. It's just, you know, in the end, there was a divergence of opinion as to who that lawyer's client was. And
first answer, I think, is that this ordinance change, by its terms, will give you and the auditor the authority to have access to that information. So
okay.
It covers that situation.
Okay.
What I guess I'm trying to say is that if I'm an outside lawyer hired by Milwaukee County to represent someone in one of these conflict of interest situations, frankly, I don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if I think you're telling me to meet my ethical duties, I'm not going to do it until a court makes me do it. Not your ordinance. And so, what I'm trying to say is that I don't think whatever you write in this ordinance, and we've written it as broadly as possible, but I don't think you can legislate that because it's an individual attorney's ethical responsibility. And they may say, it doesn't matter what the ordinance says, I have a higher authority, a Supreme Court rule, and my law license requires me to do something different. So, I think the ordinance covers the situation. Gives you all the authority you can ask for. It's written without any exceptions. But I'm just telling you that there may be times when an attorney's going to come in and say, it doesn't matter which ordinance says, I think this is an exception. But I do think it would solve the issue that came up in the recent
case. Okay. All right, and then just the last comment I'd like to make, and I know we're getting late, and this is kind of fun. the whole discussion you just had about the ethical piece, that's why under item number one, I didn't support someone else telling me what my ethical roles are on the county board. So with that little bit of twist back into the original item, I move approval of the alternate ordinance, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Jersey.
Thank you, and I think you've done a great job of describing this and concur with a lot of things being said, as I think I did the last time on this whole issue of what's a client. I mean, you can have an all-day seminar on that issue, and I have been at some of those all-day seminars.
Oh, God.
And I don't disagree with what you just said about a policy tying the hands of the attorney, because I think you're correct on your view of that. I disagree with the fact that this is a rare occurrence. Under the last administration, it became all too common. And this is what got us in trouble. And I'm just wondering, instead of focusing on the attorney who's going to say, I'm sorry, I was hired by a different client, and therefore you can't have my confidential attorney-client privilege and information, since we are the policymakers, I would prefer to instead not look at the attorney, but the person who's trying to claim that he is a client different than we are. And that is, i.e., the executive. I'm wondering if we could state that it is the policy of this county, as the policymakers, it is the policy of this county that the county executive, directly or indirectly through cabinet or other administrative executives, may not represent that he is separated from the county as an entity in matters regarding attorney-client privilege. In other words, state a policy that would prevent him from making that claim to an attorney. Or another approach might be, it is this board that shall exercise the judgment of when there's a conflict of interest between the executive and the board. Because that then gives a shield to the attorney. So if the county executive's not able to go and hire attorneys and say he's separated from the board, the attorney can then not claim that privilege. And I think that's how you have to do it. You concentrate on the policy issue of this from the county's viewpoint as the, quote, client. And in all due respect, County Executive Walker, now Governor Walker, is playing the same games with regard to court orders on whether the Capitol is an open building. And I know I may be going down a slippery slope here, but unfortunately we have seen too much of that. And it's the whole us versus them. When it's not we get in trouble. And I feel strongly about this. I do not like the fact when we have a county executive who can individually claim emergency powers and do all kinds of things, including going out and hiring attorneys and then claiming, you know, he's got privilege and the attorney can't talk to our auditors or anyone else in this government, including perhaps Comptroller Scott Mansky. And this board, I think, has an obligation to stop that nonsense. So I feel very strongly about this, and I'd like to suggest maybe we define it from a policy viewpoint so that if the county executive or this board, for that matter, both parties, to be fair, don't have the opportunity to claim that they're somehow a different branch of this county government and they're no longer acting as we. It should be the policy of the board when we say when we're not acting as we or when there's a conflict. We are the policymakers, after all. So that's how I would view it, instead of concentrating on the attorney.
Separation of powers.
Supervisor Seth, Mr. Gray, and then Supervisor Seth.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate Supervisor Driscoll's comments, and they are it's an interesting idea, which I hadn't thought about, because it is the client who holds the privilege, not the attorney. And so if the county board either forces the client, waive the privilege, that's what you do. Now, you're subject to veto and overriding veto if that's if it comes to that, but I think that is at least legally a possible thing. I guess what I would ask is that we give given time to work with Supervisor Driscoll on that.
Yeah, and that would be fine. Plus, we control the purse strings. So if he wants to do that, you know, go out and hire an attorney on your dime, buddy. Really. I mean, this is we, the county, we control public purse strings, and if you want to play politics, go do it on your own dime. I mean, that I really think we ought to look at this.
Of course, no report or resolution is before us, but it appears that that would be forthcoming. Supervisor Santalupo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was actually going to say what Supervisor Broderick was saying. Is Supervisor Jurczyk's first suggestion, I think, kind of crosses the bounds about, you know, what we can do because of separation of powers. I don't know that we can pass a policy that ties the hands of a different branch of government. But I don't know, I don't remember what the second item was that you brought up.
Well, it approach it any way you want.
Yeah.
Define who gets to be the client, define when there's a conflict of interest, or more appropriately, and I wish I'd have had a little more brains in hindsight, we're not going to pay the bill. The attorney wants to do all he wants to do, you know, go do it and collect from whoever is claiming this with his own money, because we, the county, are not agreeing with that.
Because I think, you know, in the case of the BHD situation and the audit, you know, I think we should have had access, or Mr. Hare should have had access to that. However, when you look at the problem with the lawsuit where the county board joined the side of the union, you know, now you have a situation where you're asking an attorney to give up privilege, and you say, well, a court would have to decide that. Well, I would just assume see some language put in here where we can alleviate that, because if we end up going to court every time we do that, it just costs us more money. So couldn't you just throw some language in here to say, you know, unless they're on opposing sides of the issue, you know, or cover it broadly enough so that we don't end up in court to argue over, you know, can this guy claim privilege or not?
Mr. Chairman, I can't let that go. Please.
Supervisor,
we were not on the side of the union. We had our own side.
Our ordinance.
We had our own point of view with a county executive claiming supernatural powers, if you will, under emergency situations. And quite frankly, the Court of Appeals...
We can editorialize all
well,
the lines about what happened, and some people need to get over
we were
the
not
fact
on the
that Scott Walker
the
isn't
union.
County executive anymore.
The union had its own attorney.
Deal with the problems
the,
we have
the
now.
Board had an attorney. We were not, quote, on the side of the union. So
I think I got the floor.
I think I was right.
I will interject in as much as we had an ordinance, because it was cut off. That was part of the consideration.
You have a problem with making things personal.
Supervisor Sanfilippo, would you like to continue?
Well, I guess my question was, is there a way where you could just put that in there, you know, that, you know, if you're on opposing sides or something, because the last thing I want to see is us get embroiled in drawn-out court battles to decide things that could be decided things that could be prevented by writing it, the resolution differently. It is a tough situation, I guess. But you know, I hate to rely to leave things up. And no offense to lawyers, but I hate to always leave things in the hands of lawyers, because no matter whether you win or you lose, it always costs you money when you're in a legal. You know.
I can agree on that.
Yeah, we want to try to avoid that, but. We got to clear up the issue so we don't get into the same situation we had last time.
As was said earlier, we have a resolution, we have the ultimate ordinance in front of us, and the issue that was just discussed is something that will be
It is as far as it goes.
I am asking for us to go forward and address this ordinance. Because otherwise we could be here for the next half an hour.
And actually what I'm suggesting, Mr. Chairman, what I'm suggesting doesn't conflict with this. I think we could approve this. I think, you know, Mr. Grady's interpretation of this is completely correct. It's just it doesn't solve the problem for us. And you pointed that out. It really doesn't solve the problem. And there may be an additional policy this board could have that tries to solve that problem.
Supervisor DeBruin, Mr. Session, and Mr. Harris, who wants to weigh in on this.
Mr. Chairman, I think that, I'm sorry, I'm in line.
Supervisor DeBruin, Mr. Session, and Mr. Harris.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I don't see that the follow-up information that's being requested, and there's multiple sides to that, that would require this ordinance change not being adopted. This primarily deals with Mr. Hare and then what this committee can get access to his information. The whole doing more on who's the client to kind of help prevent situations that have already occurred from reoccurring. I'm totally in support in looking at that. I just would hope that, you know, it's been months and months now, and we've got an ordinance that would help with these two other pieces, and I would urge that we at least adopt those. And so I would hope we move forward. On this other piece, if we are going to look at it, and I hope we do, I hate to throw another iron in the fire, but in one of the situations in the past, we had a situation where the county executive was not claiming that he was the client. He was saying the department's the client. Mm-hmm. So even if you define, is it the county executive or the county board who is the client, you still have the issue of when a department says they're the client in the county. You know, so it's very complex. But I would ask that I would kind of add to the chorus of, albeit disagreeing chorus of people to my left, that at least we try and look at that piece of it in a further meeting and try and see. Because I do think, after hearing from Mr. Grady, that a lot of what's happened already we might have been able to prevent if this legislation was in. So I just don't want to get rid of the two-thirds of the work we've done right because we still have another third that's out there.
It's covered. Mr. Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, along those lines, I was going to point out we have 2 weeks between today and County Board Day where we can work with the supervisors to try to address their concerns and draft an amendment to this that can be submitted on the board floor to address those concerns and try to get them codified.
And I'd be happy to work with that. Well, it would be fairly simple to do, I think.
There was another item about which I was thinking maybe we pull the committee members and about a special meeting, so if whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Grady?
Well, we just pulled staff.
Mr. Grady.
Mr. Chairman, my only comment was, there's nothing about this. This is a step forward to do what you want to do. And whether we made only a two-thirds step or a half step or a three-quarter step, it doesn't matter. We can take this step, and we can take additional steps down the road. I just don't think this is something, in terms of the additional steps we need to take, I would not rush that. From a personal standpoint, I don't think I have time in the next 2 weeks. But also, that's a big decision. This is an important thing. It's going to take some thinking about. There's no reason this couldn't. There's no urgency to it that I know of.
Okay.
So I would recommend that you take this as part of your normal cycle process of expanding the protections that you are looking for.
And I appreciate appreciate that, Mr. Grady, because the fervor and the passion are here. So we're going forward on this. Mr. Session, anything else? Thank you. Mr. Hare?
Mr. Chairman, no, I'll work with Court Counsel and staff over the next few weeks to try to incorporate some of the comments. I apologize, Mr. Vance, for the run. I had to push a lunch. I had a longstanding employee who's retiring tomorrow, and I want to take her out for a bite to eat.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be a lot of these days.
Any other discussion on this matter? We have a motion for.
I may still try to pass something past Mr. Grady, even though he's going to be very busy for the next 2 weeks. I'll prepare something to see if it passes the whiff test, and if it does, I may still try to do something as an amendment. But, okay, thanks.
Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
DeBruin?
Aye.
Cesar?
No.
Roger?
Aye.
Cherson?
Aye.
Sanfilippo?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Thank you very much.
This would be the most fun committee there is.
Thank you. This meeting is not adjourned. I appreciate the lawyers being here.